welcome to another edition of Pigeons. With me, your host, Yudley Wickham-Ashby. And today, as we celebrate Education Month in Barbados, I'm very pleased, really delighted to have in the studio with me the General Secretary of the Congress of Trade Unions and Staff Associations in Barbados, Mr. Dennis DePisa, and an executive member of the Barbados Union of Teachers, Ms. Tara Duran. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us. It's great to be here.
Thank you too. Now, I want to start, Mr. DePisa, by you telling us what is or who makes up C2SAB, the Congress of Trade Union and Staff Association in Barbados?
That's a very easy question to answer. I can tell you that the Congress is made up of the member organization of trade union and staff associations, and there are currently 9 members of the organization, and it covers those unions within the public, and a couple of those are within the state-owned enterprises. So basically, we are largely public sector, but it also includes those who are working in the fringes in the state-owned enterprises.
Okay, nice. And Tara, tell us a bit about the Barbados Union of Teachers.
Well, the Barbados Union of Teachers, right now, we represent the teachers across primary and secondary. We were founded in 1974. And we're the oldest trade union for teachers. So basically, that is what the Barbados Union of Teachers, well, obviously, we agitate for the rights of teachers within the system. So that is a brief overview of the Barbados Union of Teachers.
And I learned that the Barbados Union of Teachers recently formed a subcommittee or a standing committee that will focus on disability. Tell us a little about that.
Yes, so we have a recently formed committee that will address the needs of teachers with disabilities, and I'm the chairperson of that committee. Now, we reached out to teachers to find out who had disabilities, and we were surprised at the numbers, the sheer amount of teachers in the system with disabilities. We had expected a small number. We're still in the data gathering stages, so I can't give you an exact figure at this time, but there is a significant amount of teachers who have disabilities within the system. We also know of 2 teachers, one teacher who was hired with a disability and another teacher who is in an administrative position with a disability who are functioning at very high levels. So we're gathering more data about the needs of these teachers and how we can see true inclusion in school for teachers. We always talk about inclusion for students, but how are we being inclusive for our teachers?
And generally, employees with disabilities, I'm really delighted and at the same time a bit surprised when you say that you have a significant number of teachers who have identified as having a disability, because I know that people still have some fears and hang-ups about being identified or labeled as having a disability. So I'm really glad to know that they are bold enough to stand out and stand up.
They're bold enough to come forward, but just like you said, a lot of them do not wish to be identified and do not identify as being disabled, because you can have a sickness, diabetes, any sort of ailment that can render you disabled. And there are a lot of teachers who have chronic conditions but do not consider themselves disabled, while others will say, well, I have a disability. And others say they do not wish to speak about their disability because they feel as though they will be discriminated against. So there is all of that going on. So you're quite correct.
Right. And these are legitimate reasons, so understandable. Now, Mr. DePisa, C2SAB has done quite a lot of work around the subject of disability, and especially in the area of employment. Tell us about this work.
Well, that dates back a couple of years ago, around 2017, when we established a program that looked at the employment of workers with disabilities. And that project had a number of elements to it, starting with a seminar that was held on the 11th of April. And that seminar involved stakeholders at the National Organization of Disabled, which is BARNOD, the National Disability Unit, and the National Council for Disabled. and we had an awareness seminar. But then we went on to develop what is known as a code of practice for the employment of persons with disabilities. And that project was one that was done in collaboration with the Barbados National Organization for the Disabled, the National Disability Unit, the Barbados Council for the Disabled, the Barbados Employers Confederation, and the then Ministry of Labour and Social Partnership Relations. We are very happy to say that that project was designed with the whole purpose of establishing a framework for the management of disability issues in the workplace, which is dedicated on the building of communication and awareness. It was also intended to guide the social partners and in the main on policy making initiatives which would address the matters of the introduction of a quota system, the introduction of flexible working hours, the enforcement of penalties for unfair dismissal of workers, provision for alternate employment of workers who suffer a disability as set in the Employment Rights Act. They also wanted to address the establishing of a recruitment policy which reflect equality of opportunity, anti-discriminatory policy, to develop a communication strategy, the institution of an orientation program for worker disabilities, the promotion of an education and retraining policy so as to ensure that persons with a disability can be continuously employed, the promotion of the right of the individual to join a trade union. And the key elements of the code are identified under three headings, and these are recruitment, employee orientation, training and career development and promotion. We also have job retention, a policy on acquired disabilities and assessment and rehabilitation, and the confidentiality of information. So this was a comprehensive policy that was developed, as I said, with all of the stakeholders, and it was then having first been brought to the attention of the social partners of Barbados, and we went off and did the groundwork with the hope that the policy, though it had a soft launch, we are back in July 2019. We were hoping that the social partnership would have at one of its meetings more or less signed off on the document and then have that policy being implemented across the board. But we are still waiting for that to happen. Well, in the meantime, there's another effort more or less to go over all that has been done before when the work has already been undertaken and only need to be implemented.
So you have said quite a mouthful in terms of the policy, the document that, you know, emerged out of all the research and the discussions with these key stakeholders. Have you been able to measure what progress has been made with the implementation, especially in the areas of the orientation and training of new persons coming onto staff, you know, these individuals with disabilities, and the whole recruitment effort? Is there a significant change in how persons with disabilities are recruited? Or rather, I should even ask, is there a greater effort to recruit persons with disabilities from your standpoint?
See, that is not as easy to respond to give empirical information to support. But what we do know that in the various legislation that has been brought on stream, as we support the Employment Rights Act, we spoke to the Progression of Discrimination at Work Act and those other pieces of labor legislation, we try to address issues that really impact on both parties, both the persons who are, we would say, who are physically able and those who have physical challenges. And of course, those persons who might have a mental issue, because we have to look at it right across the board in terms of the health consciousness. But what I want to say to you, when you go back to the document that was designed, the questions that you are asking, if the policies were being followed based on the objectives, and it said here very clearly, to ensure the job applicants with a disability receive fair treatment and consideration on basis of their knowledge, skills, expertise, and experience. To encourage employers to create and promote a positive work environment for persons with disability so that they can be fully included in the workplace. To support the retention of persons with disabilities in the workplace by putting the relevant systems and processes in place, to raise the awareness and understanding of disability issues among staff through training and the dissemination of information, to ensure that persons with disabilities are afforded equal opportunity in respect of access, gaining, and the retention in employment, and finally, to take reasonable steps to ensure that employment practices procedures and working environments are as inclusive and accessible as possible. So the question that you pose, if these policy objectives are stated in the document produced by the Congress and the Code of Practice for the Employment of Persons with Disabilities, that was part of the work done by stakeholders and social partnership, then I believe that by obligation, we should be following these guidelines. So I would hope that employers are listening and would in fact try to ensure that they do what would be called best practice.
Okay. So Taryn, let me switch over to you and ask, in terms of this new committee being formed by the Barbados Union of Teachers, reaching out to teachers who have some type of disability, how will you include this code of practice to support the work of this committee?
The BUT has a longstanding history of working with C2SAB, so I believe that the committee would use this to help us move forward. But as I said, this is a newly formed committee, and what we have been doing is gathering the issues of our teachers in the system itself, such as the fact that they are working in schools without accessible parking. They're working with schools without accommodations for their disabilities. And what we're trying to do, first of all, is deal with those basic issues, deal with those ground issues first, before we move forward into working with policy.
Okay. Again, these are issues that have been raised over the years in terms of accessibility to the general physical environment and access to information, you know. So what are some of the strategies, if you have any as yet, or recommendations?
Well, the BUT, first of all, recommends, because what came out from our meetings with our members, especially teachers who find themselves disabled on the job, they get into an accident, they find themselves disabled on the job. The first thing that happens is they go on extended sick leave, and it's usually suggested that they be medically boarded. And we're looking to say, no, we need to re-educate, we need to retrain and retool and get these teachers back out into the system. We have teachers in the system, like I said, we have a teacher at this school who was hired with her disability. But because there are accommodations at the school, there's assistive technology, because this is a special needs school, it is already set out in that way, then she has all the tools she needs to do to function despite being visually impaired. And she's a very excellent teacher. And actually, during the course of her pursuing education in Erdiston, she lost 90% of her vision and was basically legally blind, and still continued to pursue her education at Erdiston and continued to teach, because we already have the tools here and the accommodations here for her to work as a visually impaired person. Whereas if you become visually impaired in the mainstream schools, there are no accommodations for you to continue working. So these are some of the things that we're looking at. We have another teacher as well who got into a major car accident and has a prosthetic leg, but he is an information technology coordinator. But the ministry accommodated him by, they added grab rails and handrails to the school so that he can traverse the entire school. So there's accommodations and accessibility for him, and his principal also works with him. So therefore, he is able to function, and he's functioning at a very high level, because he's in an administrative position. So what we are looking at is retraining and retooling. Instead of saying that teachers should be boarded or teachers should go on sick leave, when a teacher finds himself disabled on the job, let us retrain them. Let us retool them. Let us find ways for them to continue doing their job.
And that's an excellent point, because I think this is all what the policy document is speaking to. How do we help our persons with disabilities to continue functioning within their workspaces with reasonable accommodations? I think sometimes when employers hear reasonable accommodation, they immediately think of large sums of money to be spent.
And that is absolutely not true, because, for instance, visually impaired, there's a lot of screen readers and whatnot that they can use computers in order to continue their job. There's actually a teacher who is part of this committee who said that she got into an accident, and after the accident, she is fully mentally functioning, but then she can't write on the chalkboard, and all she really needs is a computer to be able to project the information that she wants to teach and continue with her job. So sometimes the accommodations are very small that are needed for them to continue in the workplace.
And I think one of the other hindrances is the slow bureaucratic process of accessing accommodations or ensuring that the accommodations are put in place.
Yes, and that's why we're suggesting that this should be done at a ministerial level. For instance, the Ministry of Education, where most teachers have to go to conduct business, and most business is done on the second floor of the Ministry of Education, but there is no elevator for those with disabilities to access the second floor of the Ministry of Education. There is an elevator in MRD, which is used for transportation of books. And the last time I checked, that elevator was not working. So we're saying, first of all, the compound needs to be accessible to teachers.
Julie, if I may.
Go ahead.
These are issues that have been placed before from time immemorial regarding how we treat the persons with disabilities as we will put them under workplace practices. And the document addresses all this because it's been made clear that adequate accommodation and facilities, inclusive a ramp for at all venues where training is being conducted for persons with disabilities. And that should also apply within the work environment itself so that persons are able to move freely, have access. And we are asking that they are given the requisite training materials and equipment. They suggest that persons should have the provision for the opportunity of training, not because that they're beyond that they can function, because they're able to do so, but they have to have access. And if training and retraining is provided, whether they have a disability or acquire a disability, because the possibility that you may acquire a disability, and retraining helps you to fit into the organization and to remain productive. So therefore, the state and the private sector employers are to provide training for individuals who have been medically boarded or deemed unfit for work in their current employment, having acquired an injury at work or diagnosis, which may be a terminal illness. So these are all parts of what we believe are the workplace practices that should be in place and the overall workplace arrangements that the employers are required to observe, as I said before, the occupational safety and health standards and practices that are in keeping with the decent work agenda and the established legal framework. And that will help us to ensure that there's reasonable accommodation, job requirements and facilities, and flexible working hours where necessary, and those type of things are observed as far as offering employment to persons with disabilities.
As you said, all of that in our discussion so far, Dennis and Tara, we have to also be very mindful of the type of society we are in currently, where we are complaining and we're hearing the messages about Barbadians with non-communicable diseases, the NCDs, which can also lead to complications and then individuals acquiring disabilities. The number of accidents that we're having on the road, we hear about them, but we don't hear the aftermath of what happens to that individual after the accident if they remain alive. And also, there is the possibility that more persons can acquire disabilities and can lead to a greater unemployment rate amongst the individuals who have these accidents or, you know, illnesses that lead to disability. And then we go down to the next level of these individuals. Unemployed may have enough benefits that they can draw the invalidity or disablement pensions, you know. So we have to look at it holistically. How do we help our workers with disabilities remain fit for the job?
I may attempt to answer that question for you, because again, I'm making reference to the policy, and it makes a very clear point that there should be non-discrimination, no discrimination at all when it comes to workers who are in receipt of an invalidity benefits payment, which prevent them from engaging in any form of employment irrespective of their level of disability. So we are saying that all persons should be brought into the employment pool. And this idea of suggesting that because a person may have a disability and having an invalidity benefit being paid, that they can't work, that does not necessarily hold water. And we need to get past that type of thinking and encourage people into the system. And as a matter of fact, I think that we all have to recognize that the whole idea of ensuring the workforce remains productive. A productive mind, one building, good state of health in terms of your mind, that drives whatever you do in terms of your functions. And therefore, we should need to encourage people through training and retraining, retooling, call it what you like, so that these persons can be able to play their part within the society.
I quite agree. Now, as we continue the conversation, Dennis and Taro, what are some of the immediate areas of concern and areas for change that you want to see addressed? I know, Taro, you said the whole question of accessibility, making the work environment more accessible to teachers.
Yes, I would say that was one of the first things, making the plant accessible. And one of the other things that we'll be looking at, we want the plant to be accessible for teachers. We want them to have accessible parking spaces. These very simple things are not being done in schools with teachers who have disabilities. We are in a technological age. We would like to see assistive technology within the schools. So therefore, if you have a teacher who finds themselves disabled, the assistive technology is already there. These are some of the immediate needs. And one thing that came out as well, a lot of the teachers with disabilities said that they're unable to gain health insurance.
Yes.
So one of the major things that we would like to tackle as a union is making sure that those teachers are able to access health benefits, health insurance. This is a major issue with teachers who have disabilities.
And for people with disabilities generally, because you're classified as high risk, and therefore most insurance companies do not want to allow you to have an insurance policy or any type of insurance benefits through, you know, that particular policy.
And not to cross you, and then another point that was raised is obviously the discrimination that they receive from peers when they come back in with a disability. So one of the immediate needs, I would think, is educating the public, especially in the teaching community, educating the teaching community so that they understand that those with disabilities can function in your schools and they should not be discriminated against. That is another immediate need, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Right. There must always be continuous training to allow for greater sharing of knowledge around people living with disabilities. And I think one of the points that stands out very strongly for me is that for teachers or any other worker who made the choice not to identify as having a disability, is denying that child or young person with a disability the opportunity and the impetus to have you as a role model to help build expectations and hope. Because sometimes children with disabilities don't get that encouragement or support to really strive to achieve some of their goals. And some may not even have goals. So you have an excellent opportunity to be a role model to children with disabilities and young adults with disabilities. And that's the point I really want to make.
But I must say that we do have teachers in the system who are doing just that. And they're very inspirational to their students. As I mentioned before, the teacher with the visually impairment, who's teaching the visually impaired, and they understand, my teacher is visually impaired and she's a teacher, and they are inspired to move on forward and understand that they can do great things as well. And the teacher with the prosthetic leg, who is an admin, who traverses the entire school, who is an IT coordinator, who does magnificent things, his students are also inspired by him as well. So we do have teachers in the system who are doing it. We have proof that it can be done. So therefore, we need to be doing it on a wider scale.
Yes. Now, Dennis, as C2SAB, how are you working with your membership to keep this code of practice at the forefront of their organization, the work that they're doing?
Certainly, as you would recognize, the beauty has taken a lead in observing some of the tenets that we wish to promote. And we are doing this constantly by brain awareness, not only in our internal structure, but externally as well. We are putting it out there to the public so that we are hoping that we can galvanize the type of support and action that will help to bring the changes that are required. This policy document that we have prepared, hopefully it will now be given an opportunity to be fully integrated in whatever work is being done. But having said that, let me make reference to the quota system that is something that we discussed and is reflected within this code of practice for the employment of persons with disabilities. And it makes reference to the fact that the public sector and government, of course, as the largest employer, should be engaging at least 1/6 of its jobs for persons with disabilities, and the other 5/6 should be within the private sector. So we're suggesting that both the public sector and the private sector must play a significant role in ensuring that persons who have disabilities are engaged in the workforce and continue to be productive citizens. So this document is the trendsetter. We need to take it and work it, because if this is done, I think we can advance the work that we are trying to do on behalf of the disabled community in Barbados.
Now, Dennis, quickly, let me ask you. Employers especially may say, given the current situation, not just in Barbados, but across the world, where COVID-19 impacted significantly on loss of jobs and, you know, the working from home, using the technology to really produce and be productive. What would you say to, one, employers, as you just pointed out, you know, implementing the quota system within their particular company? And two, the whole practice. How do we get the practice of working from home and using the online technology to still be a productive worker? Where prior to COVID-19, when people with disabilities or the disabled community called on employers to consider this type of framework, it was rejected. How can we now make it something more progressive and useful for our society, especially in the workforce?
The question is, are we serious about engaging persons in the workplace? There can be no excuse now, because the events which you alluded, COVID-19 and so forth, have given us an understanding of the playing field is level. Because if able-bodied people can work from home, why cannot the same thing be applied to the persons in the disabled community? Because they too can work from home. And once we provide them with the training, because all that is required is giving them the necessary training to be able to do the job. Persons who work from home are trained in use of the computer and their use of all the other necessary related arrangements, and they are able to function. So we cannot now go into the realm of discrimination, because on what basis will you do that? Because it has been tried and proven that persons can function from home, and whether they're able or disabled does not matter. The point that you have to maintain, as long as the person is given the requisite training, the requisite tools to do the job, then that is what would enable that person to be as productive and make sure that they are able to do what is required. The technology is there, and we need to provide it so that we can help those persons to be able to be more productive in what they do and to be able to develop their skills and competencies in a more dynamic way.
What are your thoughts on this matter too, Tara?
The COVID-19 pandemic let us see that we can work remotely. And in fact, I would say a lot of teachers were actually even more productive working from home. I mean, it was a lot more work. We can see that work can be done from home, which is something that was foreign to us before. Now, with the amount of assistive technology that there is out there, that means that those in the disabled community can most definitely work from home. I can tell you from my interactions, because I teach at a special needs school, of seeing a totally blind student typing up a document. He types faster than I do. So there's absolutely no reason why, as he gets older, he would not be able to use his assistive technology to sit down at home and work from home and compile documents and do what is necessary for the job. And I think it's clear, too, because we have former Senator Kerri-Ann Ifill. I think it's clear the capability of those with disabilities. We have a past student who is now a lawyer, and she's also visually impaired. We have people who are in the disabled community who hold positions of high power. So why can't they work from home, especially because technology levels the field for a lot of those with disabilities?
Well, I think our case has been really tried, and the evidence is there to really support the remote working, as well as the technology really levels the playing field for many people with disabilities. Now, Dennis and Tara, our time is slowly ebbing away, and I want to give both of you the opportunity to really make your final statement. I think we have had a very rich discussion today, and I thank you very much. So let's hear from ladies first. Tara?
I basically want to say, we talk about no child left behind. We need to say no one left behind. Having a disability or an impairment does not take away from you being a productive member of this society. And you should be treated no differently. Simply make accommodations. And there's a theory about if you make accommodations for those with disabilities, then you have accommodated the entire system. Because if you put a ramp in place for somebody with a disability, then somebody whose foot is hurting can also use the ramp. If you bring on assistive technology for somebody who's visually impaired, then somebody who also is having problems seeing or just having problems doing a task can also use the assistive technology to help them get through. If we provide for the marginalized, we provide for all. And it has been proven that assistive technology basically allows those in the disabled community to function at an optimal level. So in 2022, what is the problem? Why don't we have more of the disabled community within our workplaces, within the government, within private sector? Like I said, I have two shining examples in the teaching service, and they are teachers who function above and beyond the capability of the regular teacher. So just those two examples can show you that those with disabilities can shine. We have a visually impaired lawyer. We have a former senator who is visually impaired. Disabilities does not stop you from being a productive member of society. And I really think that in 2022, we need to be employing and making accommodations for those with disabilities and those who find themselves disabled on the job. We need to retrain and retool them because they can continue to function in the workplace.
Well said, Tara. Dennis?
Thank you. I was just simply summarized by quoting from the Code of Practice for the Employment of Persons with Disability that was produced by the Congress of Trade Unions in collaboration with the stakeholders. It simply requires that we treat the individuals with a disability same way as we will treat to any applicant or employee, and that is with dignity and respect. That's important, the first thing we ought to do. But we also must always never assume that persons with disabilities are unemployable. Don't make that assumption. And further all that, we should always make it clear that persons with disabilities, we should not go down the road again of assuming that those persons don't have the necessary education and training that make them fit for employment. Because sometimes what we do is you set these walls, these barriers, persons, the access, when in truth and in fact, they are capable and have what is required to take them and make them the productive employee that you were looking for. So I think that we should, in fairness to them, let's make sure that all persons are treated equally and fairly, and that at the end of the day, that we do this in the spirit of ensuring that we are all looking to ensure that each person is treated with dignity and respect.
Well, Dennis, on that note, I have to say thank you again. I've been speaking with Dennis DePisa, General Secretary of the Congress of Trade Union and Staff Associations in Barbados, and Ms. Tara Durant, Executive Member of the Barbados Union of Teachers. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and helping to continue the advocacy for the rights of persons with disabilities to work within Barbados.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham-Ashby. And remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300 and by email, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website and looking for Visions under the tab, and you can hear all of our past episodes. So until next week, I'm wishing you an excellent week ahead. And I want to say, love your neighbor as you love yourself. So until next week, bye.